everyone. Welcome the SecDef, the Secretary for Defense, Ms. Sonto Kuju. I know she is accompanied by her team members. She is here in her capacity as the chair of NDIC, the National Defense Industry Council. The council is a membership of it comprises of 11 directors general from government departments, the chief executive officers of AMSCO, and then told that Advocate Mbada, the group CEO of AMSCO, is in the meeting. Are you in the meeting, Advocate Mbada? There's Dinel, and I've just been advised that Dinel there's a team from Dinel, and let me just read the names of the Dinel officials who are in this meeting. Is Talib Sadiq. He's an interim group CEO. Welcome, Mr. Sadiq.
Thank you very much, Chair, and thank you for joining us to the committee.
Thank you so much. Carmen Lekhranje is a group CFO. Welcome, Ms. Lekhranje. Mr. Lekhranje.
Chair, she'll be joining us shortly.
She will be joining us shortly. That's yes. The group CFO, Ms. Carmen Lekhranje.
That's correct.
Thank you so much. William Shakwani, group COO.
Thank you very much, Chair. I'm in the meeting.
You're welcome, sir. And Marcia Ngema, group executive HR and transformation.
Thank you, Chair. I am in the meeting as well.
Thank you. And Merana Ki Ohe, company secretary. Michael Hobe, CEO, Denel Aeronautics. And
thank you,
Selo,
Chair. I am in the meeting.
Thank you so much. Selo Njihlele, CEO, Denel Dynamics. Bridget Selo, CEO, Denel OTR. Olisi Makatini, CEO, Denel Landwards Systems. And Paladi Peche, CEO, Denel PMP. Tandega Sabela, Group Finance Manager, in the interim, is written tentative. And Gawi Van Zyl, Group Treasurer. They're saying tentative. I think they mean there was no confirmation. They may be in the meeting or they may not be in the meeting. So that's the group that the interim group COO is leading today. And there is also colleagues from the industry who are also part of the NDIC, this National Defense Industry Council. And Mr. Sandile Ndlovu, and from AMD, SAMDEC. SAMDEC is the Export Council of AMD. Mr. Ndlovu, are you in the meeting?
I am in the meeting.
Thank you so much. And Ms. Sefalo Monsi, Damen Shipyards. And yes, Mr. William Shakwani is doubling up. I've called up his name as part of the Denel Group. Ms. Kubakile Mbolokeng from MTech. Thank you so much, Mr. Jacob Mohlame, MTech.
Will you unmute?
Thank you. And Mr. Benny Gianni, SBI MIDVIAC.
I'm in the meeting. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Jan Patrick Elmsen, RDM. I'm sorry for that.
Thank you, Chair. I'm in the meeting.
Thank you. Admiral Hicks, RDM.
Thank you, Chair. I'm here. Good to see you this evening.
Thank you so much, sir. Dr. Niven Mutli, GreenTech, SAAB. And Mr. Henny Fender, GEW Technologies.
Thank you, Chair. I'm in the meeting.
That's the delegation from the industry, and that is present here today. The sole intention of the meeting is to take a presentation from the industry. We know the role that the industry plays in our economy. And let me just quote the 2015 Defense Review. It says, South Africa requires an effective defense capability, which includes as an integral element a defense industry to support sovereign capabilities and maintain an essential level of strategic independence. That's the 2015 defense review. A capable domestic defense industry is not only vital for growing and developing our economy, but it provides the following, amongst others, ability to sustain equipment in service through ensuring life cycle maintenance, refurbishment, and when necessary, overhaul in the most cost effective way. It also provides us with an ability to upgrade, modernize, manufacture, and develop equipment and systems for the defense of our country. It also provides us with an ability to meet unexpected demand at short notice and generally reduce downtime. It also provides us with a level of strategic independence, as it reduces independence from foreign manufacturers and reduces capital outflows. It also helps us attract direct foreign investment into the economy, as foreign manufacturers partner with local manufacturers. And it gives us an ability to generate high-tech jobs and expanding both our knowledge and the skill space. NDIC developed a strategy. The main purpose, the main aim of the strategy is to stabilize, sustain, and develop the industry. So today we are meeting to receive progress on the implementation of the defense industry strategy and charter. There is a defense service code charter that was launched. I think it was last year. I'm sure the SecDef will touch on that as well, because it's transformation is critical in developing the industry, and because it is through SMMEs that the country may actually can actually create the much needed jobs. I've been informed that there are developments in Africa, and where a number of countries are now beginning to manufacture their own equipment to support their level of self-sufficiency. Algeria is one of them. Egypt, Ethiopia, Ghana, Kenya, Morocco, Namibia, Nigeria, Sudan, Tanzania, Uganda, and Zimbabwe. These are countries that are starting to look inwards because they see value in promoting their own defense industry, particularly in job creation. And as we industrialize our economy and boost our GDP. So today we are meeting just to have a chat around how well we are doing as the council. The SecDef will take us through the briefing on the implementation of the defense strategy and the charter. After which I will then invite the industry just to give us the state of the industry. And I don't expect any discussion on the state of the industry because they're presenting it as they see it. We may ask questions of clarity, just to be clarified on areas that we think we need to shed light on. Generally, the presentation is to give us the context, and because the strategy was developed and is also implemented in the context, and that context is what the industry will be presenting today. I was tempted to ask the industry to present first, to give us the context of where they stay, of how the industry, how it looks like. And before I ask the SecDef to take us through the strategy. What is interesting is that a government is a participant industry through its DNEL and through its certain enterprises and entities within AMSCO, and through the Defense, Peace, Safety and Security Unit of the Council for Scientific and Industrial Research. And it is also a regulatory authority at the same time. But above all this, it's also a consumer of goods and services produced by the industry. So government is three in one. It's a consumer of the equipment, systems, and technologies that the industry produces. It's also a major player in the production. And three, it is a regulatory body. So it's critical that there is this collaboration amongst all players, with the government playing a central role in the coordination process. I want to end with what I saw in IPAP, Industrial Policy Action Plan 16-19, from the Minister of Trade and Industries remarks. And she sets out, she says, IPAP in fact, the minister sets out four main pillars for the envisaged national industrialization project in our country. I will just mention two. He says he remarks on the importance of policy coherence and policy certainty across government, which is something that is required for the defense industry to develop. And the two, and the most critical one that today we are about, is a close collaborative effort between government, business, and labor, which is also essential to the development of the industry. So I thought I'd just say those few remarks and welcoming everyone in to the meeting and thanking you for taking your time out to come and share with us your views of the industry. And in the last meeting, it is not the first engagement we are having with the industry. I think this is the second one, if I'm not mistaken. And we were told of the, the effect of the defense acquisition budget on the industry, and which dropped from 26.2 billion rand in 1989-1990, and that's at the hay of apartheid, where the SADF, the National Party, invested every single cent in the defense of the country, as it were, that the budget of the defense force, I think, was if I'm not mistaken, there was a time where it was number two. It was the second biggest item on the budget, and above health budget, above education budget, and above social development budget. It's very top. That was the budget of the defense force at the time. Now, with poverty and unemployment being a threat, a security threat to the state, so budget being shifted to address the social economic conditions of our people, improving education, improving health conditions, improving just the general livelihood of our people. And that saw the budget given to the defense declining, and the resultant decline in the defense acquisition budget right up to 2017, right up to 7 billion rand in 2017. It declined further. I think in 2021-22, it will be zero unless something happens. And the research and development funding also declined from 6.1 billion rand, and in 89-90 financial year to 850 million rand in 2017. And it's declined even further. And I'm not too sure how much is now remaining in the budget of the defense, Department of Defense and AMSCO for research and development. So of course, that would have impact on the turnover of the various players in the industry. And in other words, I'm saying this has had a negative effect on the general turnover in the industry. And we saw jobs, declining from 130,000 employees and in 3,000 companies, that is in 1990, to about 15,000 employees in about 120 companies that are now in existence. And I don't want to say all of these companies fell by the wayside. There might have been some companies coming together, mergers, and or cannibalization, and so on and so forth. But the reality is that we had 3,000 companies back then, and we now have 120 companies currently. And back then, we were 130,000 people in the employ of the defense industry companies. We now, that number has come down to 15,000. That was shared with us at the last meeting. So today is just a follow-up discussion on these issues. Very critical issues, both for our economy and for the defense of our country. We don't want to lose the sovereign capabilities. We also don't want to lose the skills, high-tech skills that the industry was able to generate. And the industry will also tell us whether they are able to find new markets abroad, because that on its own brings into the country new money, and that would not have been there. And so I think it's not all doom and gloom. And if there's decline in the buying power domestically, and we should look at marketing outside, because that on its own brings into the country revenue and creates even more jobs for the country. With that, colleagues, I want them to check if you agree with me. SecDef, must I start with them or I start with you?
I'm okay, Chair, if you start with the industry.
With the industry. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And let me just say that, Chair, I think the Deputy Minister was supposed to join us. I don't know if he's linked, but he may just be around.
Okay. Let me just check. DM, are you in the meeting? Not as yet. All right, colleagues, welcome. And let me invite Sandile Ndlovu, AMD, and to take us through want to listen to the state of the industry, as it were. Over to you, sir.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good evening to everyone present, especially the honorable members. We are truly appreciative of the opportunity to address you this evening. Honorable Chairperson, from your opening remarks, I think you have a very firm grasp on the issues that the industry is confronted with. And based on the fact that some of the information that would be presented here, the committee is not hearing for the first time, I request then that I run through this presentation quite quickly so as to allow time for the second presentation to follow. To the person who is directing and operating the system, first let me just quickly say the presentation that we are going to table this evening will look at the profile of the South African defense industry, the state in which the industry is in currently, the challenges we are facing as the industry, and then also the proposed way forward, because we also firmly believe in tabling solutions to challenges that we are facing. Can we go to the next slide, please? Honorable Chairperson, you had correctly indicated that the South African defense industry is represented by two entities that are government recognized. One is an association and the other one is the Export Council. AMD is the South African Defense Industry Aerospace Maritime and Defense Industry Association, and it was founded about 25 years ago by original equipment manufacturers who were in the defense space at the time, and its primary responsibility is to engage all the relevant local stakeholders in support of the defense industry. With the remarks that we've given, Chairperson, one thing that became quite clear as the industry progressed was the declining buying power of the South African client, which is the SANDF, which then prompted the industry to start exploring opportunities and markets outside the country. Ultimately, then, that resulted, with the support of the Department of Trade and Industry, to the establishment of the South African Aerospace, Maritime and Defense Export Council. The Export Council is jointly managed by government and the industry, and within the Export Council, there is representation from AMSCO, DTI, DOD, and AMD. Next slide, please. Currently, within the defense industry organizations, Honorable Chairperson, we've got 72 members. These 72 members are not exhaustive of the entire industry. The organizations that we are representing, Honorable Chairperson, are voluntary organizations. So there is a fluidity in terms of membership because people can join and leave as they see fit. But we currently represent 72 members in the defense and security space. What gives us comfort is that the 72 members we represent account for about 80% of defense revenues within the country. Next slide, please. So the capabilities, and this talks to the state of the South African defense industry. We are one of the few countries in the African continent that has the capabilities as displayed in this slide. Our capabilities are quite varied. Yes, some of them are as a result of the investments that were made pre-94, but we have since honed and concentrated on what we consider as niche capabilities and in areas where we are global leaders. So within the African continent, we are the only industry that has these capabilities. And of late, we've also grown to include within our capability range capabilities such as border management solutions. We've also included UAVs, and we've developed that capability. And we are now quietly and strongly developing a cybersecurity capability, which we hope would also be able to serve the country. Next slide, please. So in a nutshell, Honorable Chairperson, the figures you were quoting confirm the figures that are now presented before us. And the state of the South African defense industry would be summed up numerically in the next three slides. What you see before you is the decline in revenue, the decline in exports, the reduction in R&D, and the decline in employment figures. And this is comparatively speaking between 2016 and 2017 and 2019 and 2020. We have shrunk in all those four areas, which is a cause for concern. Next slide, please. And this slide then paints the picture that the chairperson was talking about. If you look at a 30-year period from 1990 to 2019, which is 29 years, everything was in decline except exports. Revenues declined from 31 billion, as was indicated by the Honorable Chair. But the only thing that grew, which is what allowed the South African defense industry to survive up to a stage where it is at now, is exports. From 873 million to about 6.5 billion in 2019-2020. The 6.5 billion is, of course, counted as growth in this particular slide, but in the next slide you will actually see that it is a decline from a previous year in terms of exports. I will not talk to the other figures because the Honorable Chairperson and the committee has seen them before. Next slide, please. So with this slide, we just want to emphasize the role that exports have played in the survival of the South African defense industry. We started tracking this number from 2005, so we've been tracking it for about 15 years now. And you can see that as a percentage of defense revenues, exports have continued to grow from 2005 up until about 2017. Later on, we will account for the reasons of the growth. And what we then see is that from 2016-2017 to a period where we are at, there's been a decline in exports, and we will also account for that decline. But what this slide depicts is the relevancy of exports for the South African defense industry. Taken together with the declining budget, it then paints a picture that as a country, we need to reinforce our ability to export, because the reality we are facing is that our local client will not be in a position anytime soon to consume even half of what we are capable of producing as the industry. Next slide, please. So this is just a policy framework within which we locate ourselves as the defense industry, and I think most of these are quite clear to the committee members. Maybe just to make mention of the last bullet, which is the PPGI master plan. This is a new process that we've joined, which was established by the presidency, which now resides under the Department of Trade and Industry. We are participating in this process under the leadership of the Department of Public Entity, DPE. Which Mr. Weekend Bangani is the chair of that committee. There is a slide that will talk more to what happens here. Next slide, please. So the South African defense industry profile as it is currently constituted and located. And maybe before I talk into this, we have also made an assessment that some of the challenges that confront the defense industry is also encapsulated by the fact that the defense industry does not have a true location within the ministries. We are often associated with the Ministry of Defense, and for good reason, and because the defense ministry are the consumers of what we produce. But the South African defense industry is unique in that 99% of the companies within the South African defense industry are private entities. So they are businesses who are into this space for economic benefit primarily, which means they should by law be taken care of under the Department of Trade and Industry. But when we approach the Department of Trade and Industry, they would more often than not say to us, but speak to defense because they understand you a bit better. Yet the Department of Defense is not geared towards supporting companies as businesses. So this is one of the issues that we have picked up. Within the defense industry ecosystem, you've got the Department of Defense, you've got trade industry and competition, You've got the Ministry of Public Enterprise and Science and Innovation. All these four departments or all these four ministries have a role that they are playing within the industry space, the defense industry space. Therefore, there is a requirement for other a coordinating structure such as NDIC to be reinforced so that it can address the locality issue of having a space where all defense industry issues can be effectively dealt with. Next slide, please. So the state of the industry as we currently sit, there has been a decline in budget that is not in question, and the shortfall or the declining budget by extension means the arms of services will not be in a position to either equip themselves or even to maintain the current equipment that they are having. And in your opening remarks, Honorable Chairperson, you indicated the necessity for the South African government to be in a position to protect the sovereignty of the country and the role that the defense industry plays there. If our arms of service are not in a position to equip and maintain their equipment, us as service providers to these arms of services are also affected. And as part of the defense review that was undertaken around 2015, the defense review called for certain actions to be conducted in order to support the SANDF and support the defense industry. So if the defense review were to be implemented now, there would be a requirement of about 53 billion to execute the defense review. And this is a national treasury figure. We are heartened by the fact that our government has continuously expressed its support for us as the defense industry, and that is not in doubt. And what also gives us comfort as the defense industry is that we are very unique, and this has allowed us to find clients and partners internationally. We are very appealing to the international defense community. We have quite a lot of intellectual property that we have not yet commercialized. And if this were to be commercialized, it would further open up opportunities for us as a country and make us competitive in the space in which we are in. Next slide, please. So we are very competitive, and this can be demonstrated by the applications that we put through to the NCACC for exports. We are very competitive globally, and there are parts of the world find South African equipment very, very, very good. And what also sets us apart from our competitors is our independence, and our government has jealously guarded this independence since 1994, and it has worked well for the South African defense industry. In areas such as Africa, Asia, Middle East, and some parts of Europe, we have made inroads there, and we continue to grow our footprint in those parts of the world, and it could improve. So there is scope for improvement. Next slide, please. Sustaining the defense industry in South Africa. On this one, we are just going to touch on the impact of having the defense industry on South Africa in general. Next slide, please. So the impact that we as the South African defense industry have on national security. Part of your engagement this evening will also touch on sovereign capabilities. We allow for our government to have control over these key capabilities, even though they may be sitting on private hands because our industry is predominantly private, but they are not outside government control. So we allow our government to have control over these key capabilities, which in turn then allows them and guarantees them strategic independence, which is what every government would want. it cannot be, the same cannot be said for other countries within the African continent. We are also a useful tool for foreign policy by making it possible to support and assist our armed forces and security forces of friendly countries. We assist our armed forces in UN deployments, and that can only be possible because of the South African defense industry, or else they would have to go and procure tools and equipment from foreign powers. But the most important impact that we have as a South African defense industry is the support that we are able to give to other government departments, agencies, and also other sectors of the economy. Here we make example of the Border Management Authority because of our border management solutions that we have and cyber security solutions. But we've also participated in other sectors as well in assisting those sectors address issues that they would have otherwise had to import solutions. So in anti-poaching, we have assisted the conservation sector in the mine, rail, and safety, as well as water purification. And these are just some of the examples with regards to the applicability of the solutions that we have across sectors of the South African economy. Next slide, please. The impact that we have on the economy, Chair, you touched quite a bit on it on your opening remarks. So I will just touch on the last one, which is the spin-off and the spillover effects of having a South African defense industry that is capable and able to assist. We are heavily integrated into global value chains, and the example we are making there is the aerostructures manufacturing value chain, supplying directly to Boeing and Airbus. There are companies here in South Africa that are supplying into those conglomerates. But what we have also witnessed is that the South African defense industry ecosystem is an incubator for highly sought after skills in the science, technology, engineering, and mathematics area. So people who are trained in this sector, we find that they find themselves working in other very high-skilled sectors and contributing to other national imperatives of the country. And this can only be possible because of the training that they've received within this sector. So there are those spin-offs that the country and the economy benefits from having the South African defense industry. So it's not only in the manufacturing of weapons and security equipment. Next slide, please. So within the aerospace and defense master plan that I had made mention of earlier, we are now talking of repurposing our sector to improve South African lives for generations to come. And this has been made necessary by the realization from other sectors of the economy that, in fact, the aerospace and defense sector is not a sector per se, but it's an apex system. Because by having this sector, all other sectors of the economy get to benefit. So we are now panting and advocating for a readjustment in our thinking to see this sector as an apex ecosystem that allows other ecosystems to breathe and continue to live. And the pillars that we would be talking to there are increase in markets, and this is predominantly international markets. Localization, which talks to indigenization and job creation here at home, industry competitiveness, and human capital development and inclusion, so that no one gets left behind and our sector does not become a sector for the selective few. It is important that we promote the sector so that it's appealing to every school living child to be one day associated with our sector. Next slide, please. So in 1999, on the white paper on defense and related industry, government had a intent, and their intent was a rigorous, focused, coordinated, and a visible government involvement is necessary for the successful marketing of the South African armaments and related equipment and services. And there was also a commitment to assist the defense-related industries by facilitating those initiatives that support strategic defense technologies and capabilities. And further, government stated that they will also specifically support those industry initiatives which are supportive of existing or identified political initiatives and broader industrial policy initiatives. So we see here, Chair, that the intent is not the problem. The will is not the problem. The language that we speak is a language that would make anyone within our space very happy. But if we were to evaluate on whether this has been achieved 20 years later, we would find that we have fallen short of achieving what we had intended to do in 1999. And therein lies the challenge. It is not a challenge of not knowing what to do. We know exactly what is required to do to support the defense industry. But the challenge is on coming up with mechanisms in ensuring that we execute what the white paper charged us to do in 1999. Next slide, please. So the challenges are there. Everyone is aware of them. So we are saying to address the challenges that are there, what needs to be done? What is to be done? We are saying direct, deliberate, focused, and highest political support is necessary, which is exactly what the white paper spoke to. A government-wide approach to supporting SADC, by the mere fact that within the SADC environment, especially on the export side, DERCO needs to play a very prominent role in supporting the South African defense industry. DOD, because they are the only department that understands fully what we are producing and what it is capable of. DTI, because they are the department that is geared towards supporting businesses. Forget what the businesses are producing, but DTI is geared towards supporting those businesses. So if we've got a fragmented approach in addressing industry issues, we will never achieve what we sought out to achieve. Stable and predictable local defense spending, including on R&D. The declining budget makes this an impossibility at the moment, but it is necessary that we try and we aim for it. A stable and a sustainable DNEL. DNEL is a critical pillar of our ecosystem as the South African defense industry. When a DNEL suffers, the entire industry feels the pinch. We are going through difficult challenges now as members of the defense industry, primarily because DNEL is going through difficult challenges. When DNEL succeeds, the entire DNEL value chain succeeds. So it is important that DNEL is supported by all means necessary. An effective arms control regime to facilitate exports. Our arms control regime was conceptualized and established at a time when exports were not necessarily at the center of the survival of the South African defense industry. But things have changed, and we feel our arms control regime needs to keep up with the time to enable exports and assist them to happen seamlessly. And financing and related instruments. Here, we see that of all the sectors in the South African economy, the South African defense sector is the only sector that is marginalized and maligned by financial institutions. As a result, companies in this sector find it very difficult to get finance to implement and execute projects. And they end up losing those projects because our finance institutions do not recognize this sector as a sector worth supporting. And we think our government can assist us in turning this narrative around, and Parliament can call these guys and to come and give their reasons on why they are not doing it, whereas other competing countries out there are doing it. Next slide, please. So throughout the slide, a theme has emerged that we are very dependent on exports. It is a fact, and it is by necessity. It is unlikely to change. So let's analyze the dependency on exports for the sector to survive. Next slide, please. So we are highly dependent on exports as a sector. And these accounts, currently we are sitting at about 50% of total revenue, but we've seen that at the height of exports, we were at 62%. If you drill a bit down, you realize that there are some companies within the 72 membership company that are 100% dependent on exports. A company such as RDM is 82% dependent on exports. So exports are critical for the survival of the South African defense industry, and export markets are key to this. If there is a decline in exports, it threatens all our other contributions to the South African economy. There is a threat to jobs that cannot be questioned. The supply chain suffers, so more companies are likely to close down because we can no longer export. There's a decline in technology investments, which will, in the next 5 or 10 years, render us redundant, because we would not have been able to keep up with the pace of technology development. But the biggest damage that we suffer is to the reputation, and the reputation not only of companies, but of brand South Africa. And this is where we need to manage it, because if brand South Africa suffers, all our other projects of foreign direct investments get affected as well. The reduction in tax revenues, that goes without saying. And there's also a effect on our ability to train engineers for this field and other fields, as previously stated. Next slide, please. So we are currently sitting with a challenge in terms of how our arms control regime is implemented. And this challenge we have spoken about quite a number of times for the longest of times. Firstly, it goes without saying that our arms control regime ensures that we as South Africa remain a respected member of the global community in relation to the maintenance of global and regional peace and security. And we see this as a comparative advantage. So it is not a matter of not wanting regulation to be there. It works in our favor. It works in our favor. But because we are now dependent on exports, it needs to be a regime that is supportive, that becomes an enabler of exports, unlike in the current situation where it has become an inhibitor of exports. And we do not want to export irresponsibly. We do not want to be reckless in our exports, but we need to have a system that allows us to export in a predictable manner. On the negative side, it is precisely what I've just said, that our current regime hampers our ability to compete and our ability to successfully export due to inefficiencies, ineffectiveness, and unpredictability of the system. And the system needs to be capacitated, it needs to be improved so that it addresses the challenges that we as the stakeholder have observed. Next slide, please. So in a nutshell, our regulatory environment is comprised of three acts. The one that is more applicable to us is the NCAC Act. And the challenges that we face there, if one were to summarize them, is the regularity and the predictability of cabinet committee meetings. And these cabinet committee meetings are critical because they are the final arbiters on our applications. So if they do not sit, we end up not knowing on whether we have a green light to export or not. If they sit in a manner that is not predictable, it then also affects our ability to plan, even with regards to logistics, the movement of our goods from our country to our clients. Resourcing within the DCAC is an issue that we think needs to be addressed. And the permit application system itself. Currently, ours is a manual system.
whereas there has been moves from other parts of the world and even locally to digitization. The non-proliferation committee is now introducing a digital system. So it is possible to digitize the system, and we think that would address some of the challenges that we are facing. So if these issues are not resolved, we will suffer the biggest consequences in terms of employment, in terms of skills, but also in terms of industry itself. Because if our industry is heavily reliant on exports and they are unable to export, most will close shop. We are already sitting with about three companies which have told us that in December they will be closing for good because of the challenges that they've experienced. Next slide, please. So if we depend on exports, we then need to have a clear understanding of what each decision that the NCACC take means. And here we are not advocating for a yes decision all the time. A no decision will also be accepted provided we understand the implications. So now South Africa is in a state where we are trying to restart our economy. Our economy has shed jobs. We are trying to create as many jobs as we possibly can. So some of our national objectives as a country needs to be taken into consideration whenever we make decisions that would have an impact on them, positive or negative. So here we were just putting in schematic form what the implications would be. And it's also worth noting that with the current system as it is, you would find that sometimes a decision will ultimately come back as a yes. But if you've been waiting 8 months for a yes decision, it's very difficult for you to implement. So a late or a delayed yes decision is as good as a no decision. Companies would rather have a early no decision than a delayed yes decision because it becomes very difficult to manage. Next slide, please. So as the industry, we are currently sitting with a backlog that affects primarily most regions of the world. But the region that is most affected is the Middle East, and the value of the permits that are currently under consideration stands just above 1.2 billion. So these are in the pipeline for consideration by the approving authorities. And if we look at the brand damage that we are suffering as a country, then the damage is quite spread out throughout the world because all regions are affected. So we seriously need to address this issue. Next slide, please. In the Middle East, it becomes quite pronounced because we are not only affected by the current applications that are being processed or that are under consideration, but there are also opportunities that we are now standing to lose because the countries affected are saying we cannot continue to negotiate new contracts with you when you've been unable to deliver even on the current contract. So we are standing to lose about 24 billion worth of opportunities from those countries from the Middle East, and this has jeopardized our standing not only as an industry but as a country in that part of the world. Next slide, please. All right. So as part of a way forward, we are then proposing the following solutions and making the following suggestions. Next slide, please. The assistance that we would request and beg for from the Joint Standing Committee on Defense is just to ensure that there is a common understanding
that international defense industry relations are highly political and need to be driven by political leaders. We often compete, primarily in West Africa, we often compete with the French for business in that part of the world. And whenever the French are looking for business in Cameroon and Ivory Coast, they would send their highest political principals, depending on the value of the business. President Macron has been to West Africa quite a number of times. And every time when he leaves that region, contracts are signed behind him. So the nature of the business that we are in is highly political. And relations underpin or undermine international relations between two countries. And if there is sour relations in our space, it can affect other parts of governments as well. Brand reputation, I've spoken about this. We would request an engagement with the presidency on the implication of the challenges that we are currently facing. Instruments used by the state should support defense industry exports. We need to fast track the approval process, and we also need to allow for interim measures that would allow the industry to operate in emergency periods and in election cycles. So the COVID pandemic became quite a very strong point for us because it showed that we could not function in emergency periods because the ministers and everyone else was unable to work at that time. And because of our dependency in state institutions, even when the restrictions were lifted, we still suffered. During election cycles, the chairperson would be very well aware that whenever there is to be elections, parliament goes on recess, and ministers are parliamentarians first and foremost, and they are also then required by their own political parties to go on campaigns, which makes their availability for other government work very limited. So we tend to suffer during election cycles or when there are changes of administration. So we know this, we can prepare for this because we know it's going to happen. And digitization of the system is something that we are also advocating for. Next slide, please. This is more on policy interventions. The first one is aimed at primarily supporting domestic acquisitions because we have seen that the Department of Defense alone would not be able to consume what we produce. But we are also aware that there are other government departments who consume what is produced by the defense industry. But when it comes to procurement, they buy elsewhere, unlike the defense. So if there were to be designation of certain types of products for local content, meaning it would force our government departments to procure locally because the capability is there and it would then support the growth of the industry locally. Something similar to what CETA was established to do is bulk procurement approach. While CETA does it in the ICT space, we are advocating for something similar in the security space. You've got metros that are procuring what we are consuming. You've got government departments and you've got the DOD. If there could be a bulk approach to procurement, not only will our companies survive, but our government would also save a lot of money and cost in that. And AMCO could assist in this process. And then the implementation of the border management agency, this will unlock quite a lot of opportunities and our industries could benefit from those. Last slide, please. So here we are talking about intellectual property and also the arms control. We did make mention of the fact that there is quite a lot of intellectual property that is not exploited, that is not commercialized, that some of it is sitting within government control and government ownership. So if there could be a framework in which this IP is exploited for the benefit of the country, and South African defense companies could then participate in those processes. The most important one is the review of the current legislation and the update thereof, just to see if it is still relevant to what it was intended to do, to ensure that it is also keeping up with the times in which we are in now. Of course, without neglecting our international obligations as a country. And we then also request the Honorable Chair to engage the other committees, because as we've indicated, we need to have a holistic approach in dealing with defense industry issues because of the nature of the industry that we have as a country. So if the Chair could then also on our behalf engage other committees, we would be willing to subject ourselves to an engagement of this nature with those committees as well, so that we also make it visible to them on how they impact the defense industry and how they can assist the defense industry to grow and to survive. Chair, that brings me to the end of the industry presentation. I hope I've done justice to it, and I then hand back to you, sir. Thank you.
Thank you very much for the presentation, an enlightening presentation, I must say. But some of the things are not new to us. Some we thought they've been resolved, because we had a discussion with you, with the industry previously, and you expressed some of the sentiments of the challenges that we thought were resolvable. So you don't need anything scientific to resolve them, because sometimes there are man-made challenges that only men can resolve them. All right, the good thing in this meeting, there are various players in the industry, and on the screen I see that even the Secretariat of the National Conventional Arms Control Committee is represented. I see Ezra Jele on the screen. I don't know who he is with, but they come from that regulatory authority that you spoke about. And you raised issues that you think they hamper the company the industry to be to compete successfully. I know they've addressed some of these issues, and I'm sure he would want to comment. I wouldn't want to shut him out of this meeting. Advocate Bada, may want to comment, and I also saw Sipho Mkhwanazi, one of the executives on the platform, and I don't know who else is coming with them, but I'm just saying who are on this platform, so that you know that the discussions is at a level at which we have all the role players. And as I said, we can only win if we put together our own efforts. All right, I said I will open it up for questions of clarity. And maybe I should, I don't know, maybe I should let the sector to present and then have the discussion after her presentation. I'm tempted because I must allow Jaile to say something because there are issues that pertain to his environment that have been mentioned that I'm sure he's itching to address them. All right, let me just pause there and invite SecDef to do the presentation, and I will then come back to the two presentations.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I would ask, yes, okay. If we can move forward, if you can scroll, yes. So our presentation tonight aims to give an update on the National Defence Industry Council and how far we have come in the implementation of the defence industry strategy. And then we will look at the implementation based on the different issues that have been raised under the strategy. And then also we would like to end the presentation, Chairperson, with what we perceive are the challenges. And I must say that I'm grateful that you gave me the opportunity, because listening to the previous presentation, I think there are areas of overlap. So it really makes sense to take them together. So thank you very much for that. So if we can go to the next slide, please. I'm not going to dwell much on this one, because I think that the chairperson in his opening remarks has alluded to how the NDIC has been formed and who are those that are members of it and all the other things. So suffice to say that, Chairperson, the strategy was approved in 2018, and as a result of that, a number of initiatives has been undertaken to try and bring to life the things that are espoused in the defense charter. And I think that you'll see that in our presentation, we will tell you about some of the progress we've made, the successes, and then also I think that there are some setbacks, and then we will eventually end our presentation with the challenges that are there. And of course, as mentioned in the previous presentation, one of our difficulties was that our last meeting was actually only in November 2019. And I think there was anticipation that at the beginning of this year, the meetings will continue. But then with the COVID-19 being a feature, then most of them were not possible. I think, Chairperson, one of the things we'll talk about is when we talk with Jaile is that the issue that needs resolution around the end user certificate, because what is interesting about it is that it's not an issue that is covered in the legislation, but I think that on the proactivity side of the South African government, it was then put there, because it does have some challenges when you have to go and inspect whether the weapons that you've sold to other countries are not going to end up with the users. And with most countries, the difficulty is from a security point of view, because they don't want to open up where they keep their weapons and what you are going to be able to see. So it becomes a challenge. But then also, to what extent are we diligent about verifying whether whatever we sell doesn't end up with a third party? So, and I just want to mention also, Chairperson, that the defense sector charter itself, as well as the strategy, they are available on the website of the Department of Defense. So if we can go to the next slide, please. Yeah, Chairperson, I just give a little bit of a background of what we are seeking to achieve as a result of having a strategy. And primarily, it is really to ensure that we have a very sustained and developed security industry. And I think it's very critical. In the previous presentation, I think I couldn't stress more the importance of the security defense industry. Particularly, I think that what is appealing with it is that It not only focuses on issues of security, but it is also a security asset, and also from an economic point of view, we use that to generate income back into the country, as they also elaborated earlier on. Amongst other things that the strategy talks to are the issues of the sovereign defense technology capability. That this is what is key to us. And I think that it has been spoken about not only from the defense, from the DINEL point of view, but from the industry as a whole. I will tell you, Chairperson, that from the Department of Defense perspective as well, is that we are worried, and I will go a little bit into details on the situation on DINEL. And I think that we would be appreciative to get assistance from the committees to try and let their weight behind what our frustrations are, because then you tend to lose lots of jobs and things like that. But from a defense point of view, all our capabilities almost are from DINEL. So if we are going to have a DINEL that's going to go down, then we have no arms code to talk about. But also, we are not going to have any defense force to talk about. And it is even going to be difficult to maintain the current capabilities that we have because they are from DINEL. So what option we will be left with is that then we have to make money available, which we know that is a scarcity at this point in time, to then procure externally. But when you procure externally, what are the security challenges that we're opening ourselves to? And then, of course, the other thing that the strategy talks about is the level of the strategic independence that provides you, you know, by being in the industry, because you can produce for your own market, but also you can then export. And then the strategy also provides for the defense force with a requisite optimized equipment capacity. It is very critical, because then at least when we have our own, then we are able to export. So we will procure domestically as well as externally. And then, of course, I think there was a touch on the issue of the diplomatic tool. And DERCO is very critical here, because then they are our face to the world, and they are the ones that are able to promote the South African businesses outside, and then so that then we can attract foreign currency from the other countries that will help us be able to respond to our own domestic challenges. So I think that one cannot overemphasize that if you look at it from a diplomatic tool point of view, marketing becomes therefore extremely critical. And then, of course, the strategy says that we need to have equipment that we can provide to other security agencies. Chairperson, let me just say that with the problems that DINEL is facing, it was actually it sobered us up to actually understand even how many of some of the security cluster departments were actually procuring even things like bullets from other countries, when we can produce them. PMP is here, but we were not buying. And I think that what was good is that in trying to deal with the issue of DINEL, we felt that we needed to bring the JCPS cluster on board. And from that, we then saw that it is possible, if as government and a country, we throw our weight behind DINEL, we will salvage our defense industry. So I think that was something positive that came from that. And we, of course, need to maximize the positive impact of defense spending by means of actually building our local manufacturing capacity. And then also that will help in terms of bringing money into the country, but it will also help us to create more jobs that we always talk about. And of course, we know that during COVID-19, we lost a lot of jobs. So I think there is that potential within the industry to create even more jobs. Then also we think that we can encourage local design and development and therefore that will help us to generate exports. I think that technologically we're not doing badly as a country, and we can only harness that. And the thing, the more we innovate, is that the more we are going to have products that we're going to be able to put on the table. Now, the other thing to that we want to look at is the issue of establishing new technologies. I think one cannot overemphasize that, but you cannot also divorce the issue of new technologies from catapulting the industry to a new level. But you also can do new technologies when you also invest in research and development. On the next slide, Chairperson, can we go to the next slide, please? On the next slide, Chairperson, here we are just trying to demonstrate a point that you know, if we do not
our host, can you switch off Honorable Chabelang's mic? Thank you, it's off now. My apologies, Sector.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think in this slide we are trying to drive the point home of why it is important that the defense industry needs to be supported. Because if it isn't supported, one, we may be faced with an uncontrolled shutdown. And if we do have the uncontrolled shutdown, very little will be dependent on us as to what we do, because it would be uncontrolled. But what it will do is that the industry will implode, and at best it will fade away, and we will run out of orders and exportable products as a country. And I'm not even going to belabor the point on what that impact will have on the defense force itself. We will even lose our maintenance, repair, and overhaul capability. So I think that's why we thought that we need to emphasize that. The second thing, if then we don't throw our weight behind the industry, is that we may have the luxury of having a planned shutdown. So what that means is that there would be no likelihood of defense acquisition and research and development funding. So what we will only be dependent on will then really looking at issues of maintenance, repair, and overhaul capability. But that in itself will probably not be sufficient. We will, the third one is that we can secure, stabilize, and sustain. And this gives us the opportunity to then say that, you know what, we want to take the industry seriously. And if we do that, we give it some degree of security, we stabilize, but also there is sustenance. But over and above that, there is a lot of predictability. And so we will need to have a focused acquisition strategy, and then R&D funding. It becomes very critical if we are to sustain our production development and also design capabilities. Because remember, we design so that then we can export elsewhere. I think that this is something that we need to look at seriously. Then the fourth option is that we secure, we stabilize, we develop and sustain. This is largely dependent on availability of funding. This is not affordable if the funding levels are not going to be supporting that. What we can do then is that with whatever is available, we can only stabilize and sustain. And then at a later date, then look at development. So it means that we'll be stagnant also in terms of coming up with new products that we want to be sending out. So this is really largely also an option that we can pursue in future, but that will be likely, most likely dependent on adequate funding. And this, Chairperson, I mean, we were telling you what our strategy envisaged, but we know that already we are in trouble as a defense industry. Now, what is the desired end state, which is on my next slide? So with the next slide here, we are just saying that as South Africa, our vision is really to be globally competitive and have a very much integrated defense industry. And that will be supported through what is our national interest. And that supporting of the industry is also largely dependent on what government does. And that's the preferred choice for defense-related solutions. We can then say we can focus primarily on the African continent. But even now, you'll see that the procurement that we have, there are many other countries that come outside the continent. But if we don't also move forward, Chairperson, I think in your opening remarks, you were mentioning a number of African countries that are also getting into this industry. So it's going to be very competitive. So whilst ours is struggling, others are starting. And I think even in the industry, we have the best. I mean, if you take Pinel, for instance, you take the dynamics, our missile technologies amongst the top five in the world. So, and what Pinel has, it has taken us over a period of 50 years to build. Are we going to let that goal now at this point in time? In terms of the vision, Chairperson, we think that we must develop and sustain a very effective defense industrial capability that is really based on synergy between government and the private role players. And I think that what we have today, you know, being invited by the portfolio committee demonstrates that government understands the importance of this industry, and one cannot overemphasize that, and that can help us to move to a point where the needs of the defense force and other clients will grow beyond our borders on the African continent. Like we say, we are amongst the best in the world, really, despite the fact that we have a situation with Pinel being classified in the manner that it is classified now. Now, what are the objectives that we are putting forward with a desire to achieve the desired end state that we want? We think that it is important to provide a sustainable military capabilities for South Africa, with particular focus on capabilities deemed to be sovereign and strategic. The second one, Chairperson, is to enhance the country brand. And I think that the previous presentation touched on that, and which is going to help us with advancing the objectives of our economy. And this we can do through the design and, of course, export of local technologies. And that puts us on the international map, and will be also a force to reckon with. Then the third one is to support the national development and transformation agenda. And I think that in the strategy after the defense charter, it talks to that, and I will touch on the issue of transformation later in my presentation. And then lastly, Chairperson, one of our objectives is to develop a strategic science, engineering, and technology skills and capability. Those are critical, because then if your technology evolves, it means then we are going to also innovate a lot, and then we can also start looking at other capabilities that we can come up with. Can we have the next slide, please? Chairperson, I just want to say that on the implementation of the strategy, there are five areas of phases that were selected as areas that of the focus. The phase one, it talks to the secure and the stabilization of existing capabilities. We cannot lose what we have. If anything at all, how do we enhance that and build more on what we already have existing? Then the second phase talks to the sustaining of capabilities. Let's not lose what we have, but rather say, where do we get more funding to to actually even sustain. And right now, with all the things that have been even alluded to in the current presentation and what I said, is that at the crux of everything is the issue of funding. So it becomes then very difficult to even sustain our capabilities. Then phase three is the issue of the support of a turnaround. You know, what are the kind of continued interventions we want to put in place, you know, in the event we have a difficulty. And then phase four also talks to the issues of support for future development. We cannot be stagnant in one place. So always we look at developing. And I think that is what the strategy is talking to. And the repositioning of sovereign capabilities. We know the ones that we have, but also with the technology and development, I think that if there is an improvement in the repositioning of our sovereign capabilities, we can only open up more markets for our defense and industry. Let me also say, Chairperson, the current initiatives in line with the strategy, they focus on the defense sector charter, which is largely about how we look at the issues of a broad-based economic, black economic empowerment. It also touches on the issues of the defense industry fund. And it is critical to mention this because then you will find the small and medium companies that are struggling to enter the market. And mostly it is because of the lack of funding. And then also the resource-based alternative funding model, which others commonly call as the barter system. That is something that we need to look at. And then, of course, the designation of small caliber weapons and ammunition. And this we have also classified it under our sovereign capabilities, where we produce your guns, your rifles, and all those ones, so that they, we don't lose the market, but we also begin to create a local content. Next slide, please. Chairperson, allow me to go into the NDIC initiatives, what it is that we're doing to implement the defense industry strategy. So here, Chairperson, let me start off by talking about the objectives of the charter. The objectives of the charter have to do with the transformation of the industry. It focuses on ensuring effective participation of Black people in the South African defense industry. And then it also encourages a participation and growth of the small, medium enterprises in the South African defense industry, as well as encouraging and promoting growth of technical innovation, which is really key, because if we don't innovate, then there would also not be any growth. And then we promote also a South African defense industry that is that we want to see being profitable and a sustainable industry. And I think that with the previous presentation, it showed where we used to be and where we are at now. And what is it that it is going to take for us to go back to what was, if ever we are able to get to that. And then of course, the other intention is to promote local manufacturing capability, which will be good for our own local consumption, but also for export purposes. And then of course, there are issues of advancing the acquisition, retention, and transfer of critical, technical, and scarce skills. And I think this, Chairperson, is very critical, and you will see that later on we will talk as well about the issue of denial, because with the state in which they find themselves, we have lost a lot of skills to other countries. Now, this also does impact on your IP, because your IP is the workforce that you have, the ideas that they bring, and that's where your IP is. If we lose them, what does that then mean for our South African defense industry? But even those ones that recruit them, I think if I'm not mistaken, in July only, DINEL lost about 81 engineers just in 1 month. So that is a very dire situation. We need the Charter 6 to protect our sovereign capabilities in the South African defense industry. And then we also seek to promote entrepreneurship and also allow for new enterprises to emerge in the South African defense industry. Having said that, Chairperson, when you look at then the defense sector code, the charter was then published for comments from all walks of life, and of course in 2019 it was gazetted, and already at the arms core level, they are already conducting and procuring for some of their acquisition programs from small and medium enterprises. So this is encouraging, and I think that later in the slides we will show some of the numbers of those companies that have benefited. Then also, what are the unique features is what we touch on, Chairperson, of the defense sector code. The DFC makes provision for recognition of companies that do businesses with military veterans. That's one, and that is the unique feature. The second one being that the defense companies are required. I think that for the first time we are then requiring the industry that they contribute 1% of their net income per year, and that the intention is to set up a different fund, and then later a decision will be taken whether is that money going to help either serve as a grant to prop up some of the small businesses, or how do we want to deal with that. Then also, Chairperson, under the defense sector code, there is it makes mention of the need to have a defense sector code a council. So this council basically has functions are clearly elaborated, and they are the ones where they provide guidance, clarification, support, and assistance with the interpretation of the defense sector code, but also to make sure that there is compliance, because if we then don't hold companies accountable, maybe we'll never transform the sector. But also the council is supposed to facilitate the implementation of the defense sector code, and then they have to also compile on an annual basis a report on the overall progress that is made by the industry with regards to the implementation of the code. And then of course, they do issue implementation guidelines, and they also initiate and supervise revisions to the defense code. And then also the most critical function, Chairperson, is that the council has to assist with the establishment of the Defense Industry Enterprise and Supplier Development Fund. Now, this is the 1% that we are talking about. So it will be within the fund. And I think it will complement well the Defense Industry Fund. Now, Chairperson, let me also state that the council has to be appointed by the Minister of Defense and Military Veterans. At this point in time, this has not yet happened. I had a conversation with the minister, and her intention is that by the end of January, we should have this council in place so that then we are able then to get started with the functions that they have to carry out. Now, because then we don't have the council in place right now, we propose that the interim arrangements that the BEE steering committee serves as an interim charter council, and that the steering committee has recommended that the enterprise and the supplier development fund, in the meantime, whilst we establish the fund, if ever we establish that fund, that it should be hosted by the defense industry fund. And the proposal, Chairperson, is that because the industry the Defense Industry Fund is already in place. I understand that the process to set up the fund is very protracted, but also is very costly. So why not latch onto this one? Because the Defense Industry Fund is also supposed to help the small businesses that are trying to get into the into the defense industry sector. Now, focusing on the next slide, please. Here we focus specifically on the defense industry fund itself. If we can go to the next slide, please. So one of the barriers, Chairperson, I think I mentioned this, of entering into the defense industry is the lack of funding, particularly for the small businesses. And then, of course, to address this issue, AMCO, the AMD, and the particular bank, they came together and established would be a fund that is foreseen to be run independently. And this has been licensed, and it is also run by a fund manager. So this fund was launched, Chairperson, in 2018, and the sole purpose of this fund is to provide contract financing to small and medium enterprises and to facilitate also transformation of the defense industry. So DIF provides contract and project financing to small, medium businesses and to defense and security companies in South Africa. So this is intended to help companies that want to enter the industry. It need not be only in government or state-owned enterprises, but even those that will want to go that will be doing things with broadly with our South African defense industry. Now, the governance structure in place is that there is a fund manager, which is licensed by Financial Sector Conduct Authority, and there is also a DIF Advisory Council Board that is constituted with representatives from the DOD, AMSCO, AMD, and the fund manager. And the DIF has an advisory council board which meets every quarter. A process at this point in time that we are following is that with defense, we are also expected to sign an MOU with this industry fund. So that is still a work in progress. The MOU has been developed and is still being looked at. If we can go to the next slide, please. Now, from the capital raising point of view, our highlights is that already it is in place, the fund, and it is functional with a proper infrastructure in place. I think it's important to emphasize that. But then also we have Chris Capital that has managed to raise the initial capital from capital markets to lend defense's small and medium enterprises. The funding is specifically for contracts or purchase orders that are issued to small and medium enterprises. The downside of it is that the fund did not get any support from the public sector institutions in terms of giving their financing, or nor did they could they receive assistance from the development finance institutions that they have provided funding to DIF. Defense sector does not seem to be provided support that will encourage the non-defense related investors to also want to come to the party in terms of providing funding. What are the ideal objectives that we want to see come out of this? So, and these would be what we would ideally want to have, that we would be good to integrate the funding with the Enterprise Development Fund, with this funding to show private sector that the defense is also supportive of what they are doing. So if then the idea is that we have them together, then it will show that at least from the government side, also there is something that we are doing to throw our weight behind making sure that we prop up the small businesses in the industry. And then of course there was the issue on the Dinel Retirement Fund and the AMCORI Retirement Fund that could also provide funding to the defense industry fund
with the aim to promote the industry that its members belong to. The next slide, please. Then on the loan origination, the highlight is that CRIT Capital is receiving applications that come from AMSCO as a result of the deflisting on the AMSCO's website, and that it is also currently, the CRIT Capital is also currently reviewing 5 loan applications, which is a good development, and that the first AMSCO invoice discounting deal was approved already in October of this year with funding directly provided by CRIT Capital partners. However, having said that, Chairperson, one has to say that there are also challenges that we are facing, we still have to, as I did mention, that we still have to finalize our MOU, but also the issue of the deep integration within DOD and AMSCO. Right now, that is what we think is probably something that we need to fine-tune. The issue of the MOU I've spoken about. And then, of course, CRIT has also requested a list of tenders issued and awarded to SMMEs, but lists are not always provided or always available. And the contact details of some of these small and medium enterprises are not made known. So it makes it a little bit difficult to then see how we are going to assist them with the funding. And then DIF has requested invoices as well of outstanding payments not paid by DOD and AMSCO. And again, here, I think the information has been very difficult to make available, but it's something that we're working on and see what is possible to do. Because then this is a fund that we need to be supporting wholeheartedly with a clear objectives of uplifting the small businesses. And then the outcome, the ideal outcome is that DIF to be listed on the DOD and AMSCO tenders as a source of funding. And I think I did mention that already some of the companies are aware that this is available. And CRIT to be provided with a list of issued and awarded tenders, and also provide with a list of invoices that are yet to be paid, and that this maybe can provide funding where there are struggles on the back of those invoices. So, and then of course there is also an issue about the ability to verify contracts with AMSCO and DOD at any point and not hindered at this point in time. Now, on the issue of the governance, which is on the next slide, Chairperson, on the issue of governance of DIF, I did mention that the DIF has an advisory council that meets on a quarterly basis and has been meeting on a continuous basis since its inception. And then AMSCO and AMD participate in all these meetings, and that CRIT Capital principals are going through AMSCO security clearance, and I think that these will be resolved as soon. Where we have challenges.
It's 10 to 8 now. I'll give you until 8 o'clock.
Okay. All right, Chairperson. I'm almost also close. Yes. Okay, if we go to the next slide, then Chairperson, this slide talks to our sovereign capabilities. I don't think that I will spend a lot of time because the other presentation did touch on it. And then here, Chairperson, on the task team on DINEL, I think we have talked about it because then when ENDIC established this with an intention of giving support to the DINEL executive in finding solutions to their liquidity crisis. And then a comprehensive report was compiled with recommendations that were made. And then, and of course, there was the motivation for additional funding that the National Treasury can make to assist DINEL. And then, of course, I think some of the challenges were that the CEO at the time left, and right now we have an acting group CEO. So those are some of the things that the task team were able to come up with. But I did also mention, Chairperson, that the Department of Public Enterprise, DOD, and National Treasury were also looking at how we can assist to revive DNEL. And a lot of work has been done to the extent that we've taken the process also to the JCPS cluster. And we hope that if we put all our heads together, we should be able then to find a solution. Then on the next slide, here we talk about the testing on DNEL. There is a company that's comprised of Black South Africans and military veterans, and that is currently looking at a possible investment into PMP. And this has been discussed, of course, with DNEL. And then also the issue of DNEL was asked to include all its CEOs from different entities to the executive management, that they also look at decentralizing their budgets and run their businesses as a probably separate entities. And AMCO was also requested to pay DNEL suppliers directly. And then meetings were held also with different suppliers and promised direct payments by AMCO. And then, of course, the AMCO is looking at waiving some of the penalties against the DNEL. And then, of course, there are attached letters written to the Chief Logistics and AMCO CEO regarding compliance with the BBBE Charter. And then on the next slide, Chairperson, this issue talks to the resource-based alternative funding. Here, we're basically saying that we need to look at other ways of selling from our defense industry, but then you do find countries that are not having cash to be able to pay, but they may have natural resources to pay that. And I think we were going to have a dialogue with Zambia. And of course, then because of COVID, we were not able to pursue this further. But that would have been good from a point of view of a pilot. Then here, Chairperson, we did mention that from a sovereign capability side, there was the issue about localization and designation of small caliber weapons, which is on the next slide. And then we think that this is good because local production will boost the industry and also create jobs within the country. And this is about the production of the pistols and small caliber weapons in South Africa. In the past, this was done by DNEL, and I think that there is still a small capability that DNEL has to still do the same. And there is a need that we consolidate all our user requirements. And that is now from a perspective of the South African government, looking especially at the law enforcement agencies, SANDF, SAPS, Metros, Border Management Agencies, and Intelligence and Services. Then on the last slide, Chairperson, I'm now rushing this through, is that we managed to get this information, I think through AMSCO, and then you will see the figures here. This is a list of Black-owned suppliers and military veterans that are already doing business with DNEL. On the next slide here is also Black-owned suppliers and military veterans, and there we go down to give you the spending and how those Black companies have been able to be considered for some of the jobs. And then our last slide talks to the issues of the challenges. Here we are saying that the DNEL situation has made it difficult for many SMMEs in the defense sector to survive because they form part of DNEL supply chain. And I think that we're talking about hundreds of small companies, and that the decrease also in the DOD budget has resulted in the decline in demand, and thus making it difficult for defense companies to survive, because we were the biggest client of DNEL. And the issue of the end user certificate, I think it's still work in progress looking at it, but it will vary with countries that we deal with. And then we do state that the outbreak of COVID-19 pandemic has also slowed our efforts to get the designation of small caliber weapons and ammunition to be really presented to the JCPS CASA, which is the potential client for these small caliber weapons. And then of course, I did mention that the Defense Sector Charter Council is not established, and the minister has committed that by the end of January we'll have this in place, so that then also we look at the issue of the fund where the industry will contribute 1% of their net annual net income. And then also, Chairperson, I think there was the issue on the NCACC, and yes, we have Mr. Jelle who's participating here. We do understand the difficulties that are posed by that, but also the NCACC sits at the level of ministers. And sometimes there are challenges, particularly when it comes to availability and the issues of the quorum. And then also, Chairperson, lastly, just to say that we need to have a create an enabling environment that will facilitate business exports and help us to utilize the defense industry to contribute to the bigger economy. So, Chairperson, that concludes my presentation I submit. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, SecDef, for the presentation. Very comprehensive. It covers all critical areas, and I'm really grateful. DNEL was implicated in the presentation, but not in any bad way, and we all agree that we can't allow DNEL to go down. If it were to go down, it would go down with the number of industries who are part of the DNEL value chain. And it's got to be saved. I don't know how. And but the interim, the group interim CEO is in the meeting. We had a discussion with them, and they, introduced. They took us through their turnaround strategy. And I don't know where it is, because we're hopeful that it will bring about stability and start to address liquidity challenges in DNEL. And but when we started hearing things in DNEL that they were battling paying salaries, and that the CEO resigned, and that made all of us to start to ask questions. Is it a turnaround strategy? What is its effect? So DNEL, we just have 3 minutes. And Jelle, Ezra Jelle, advocate Ezra Jelle from the NCACC. You are also implicated, but not in a bad way again. But I'm sure you may want to say one or two words so that we are able to see where the gaps are before we launch into discussion. And let me start with you, interim CEO, group CEO of DNEL.
Thank you, Chair. And thank you for having this event this evening. We're very pleased to be part of it. Yes. Chair, as you did point out, the situation that we find ourselves at now is very concerning. Where at the beginning of the month, we are unable to tell our staff that we would honor our commitments that we've made to them in terms of their salaries. And Danel is a people business because our IP lies on the people and the skills that we have. We are quite a skilled
I'm losing you, CEO. Mr. Sadiq. Hello, colleagues. Is the problem on my side?
Based organization. Almost two-thirds of our people are technical.
Sorry. Did you experience any problem hearing him, or it was the problem was on my side?
No.
I think the problem is on his side.
Just go back a bit, Mr. Sadiq. Last time you talked about challenges of paying salaries, which was at the beginning of the year. The past year, this past January or next January, which period are you talking about?
Chair, we've been having problems paying salaries from about May this year. During the lockdown, when we had started the lockdown, we had met the full salaries in April, and since April onwards, we've been having serious liquidity challenges because of the points raised by both the SecDev and from the AMD regarding the permits issue and our borders being affected. So that had an impact on our revenue. And that's what we have experienced to date. So our strategy has been, as pointed out by the SecDev, to decentralize the organization. So each of our divisions have now need to stand on their own in order to be client-centric, because this was a request we've received from our clients, where we ring-fence the monies for each of our clients and we manage their business accordingly or their contracts so that we can deliver what is required. We are in this place as we were almost 15 years ago. But the challenge we do have today, Chair, is that the defense spend has declined significantly. And what we've seen from Mr. Ndlovu is the high dependency on export revenue on the defense spend. And what we are saying is the structural reforms that we need to introduce is to conclude strategic equity partnerships. And the key criteria we'd be looking at from these strategic equity partnerships is to enable us to get sustainable market access in order for us to reduce our dependency on the local industry. Also to bring in much needed capital into the business to strengthen our balance sheet. And then we are also looking at technology development and technology in South Africa. We are seeing our partner countries looking at strong localization initiatives, and we would want to participate with these partner countries because the risk we have, Chair, is that our export revenue will dry up as a result of our partner countries establishing partnerships with other players in order to localize their defense capabilities in their countries. We are experiencing a huge turnover in our staffing. Although it's within the average of under 10%, we are losing skilled people in some of our key sovereign capabilities, in particular our missiles. We do have a
We've lost him again, Jay.
Yes, we lost you again.
Challenge attracting skills, and that with us not having execution, where we are unable to improve our reliability. From a stakeholder point of view, Chair, we are also seeing some of our banks, our lenders, being reluctant to support the defense industry. There are negative preconceptions about the industry, and we need to ensure that we are able to be profitable, that we become an attractive business so that the bankers and the lenders will come back into the industry and provide us with the much needed guarantees so that it'll enable us to build our export revenue. So we are seeing these trends in our partner countries, and I think it would be good, Chair, if one can study the trends not only in the rest of Africa, as you pointed out, but in the in our partner countries in the Middle East, to see what they are doing to develop localized capabilities. And the point that was made earlier on by you, Chair, is the defense spend on the economy and the way it's moved from where we were in the 90s to today. I think those are some of the key points I wanted to make, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Group CEO. And may I invite Advocate Jelly for 5 minutes? Mr. Jelly? Mr. Jelly?
I'm trying to unmute myself. Am I audible?
Yes, you are. Certain things were said that I'm sure you would need to explain and so that we can then move forward.
Okay, good evening, everyone. Thank you, Chair, or Joint Chairs, for giving me an opportunity to make some comments or respond here and there. But also, because you also have the Secretary for Defense there, I could perhaps request dutifully and respectfully that perhaps before I proceed with a comment or comments, is there anything that the SecDef wishes to also share with regard to the NCACC? Because the SecDef is the chair of the scrutiny committee, which is a subcommittee of the NCACC. So clearly, whatever is mentioned is actually known also by the SecDef. So could I defer to the SecDef just for a minute through you, Chair?
Yes, I think you are a bit unfair to SecDef because I doubt if she's aware about the concern regarding regularity and predictability of the cabinet committee meeting. And my assumption that the matter has been addressed. The current chair of the NCACC, Minister Jackson Mthembu, was very categorical that that has been addressed, and so they now meet regularly, and the issue now shouldn't be a concern any longer. And she may want to comment on that. And, but when the issue was raised, and she was not there, and I understand exactly how the matter was responded. And then the issue of end user certificate, even though the industry did not raise it, but the sector has covered it adequately in her closing remarks. The issue of permit application system being manual and so on and so forth, just deal with what you can deal with, Advocate Jelly, and the sector will come back when she clarifies some of the issues at the end. She still has another point.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. I shall proceed. The aspects relating to the NCACC and the predictability of meetings or not, as pointed out, has been addressed. As we speak now, the NCACC is up to date with its with meetings, and whenever there is a meeting that would actually have been scheduled that didn't take place, the NCACC makes up for that in the month following, to the extent that there is a supplementary scheduled meeting next Tuesday by the NCACC to deal with matters that could not be finalized at the last meeting, which was in the last 10 days. Most of these meetings are scheduled and take place at the guidance and directive of the NCACC chairperson. And they are very, very adamant at having these meetings as per schedule, but the challenge that often arise, partly because of the current alert levels and the pandemic and other aspects related to the NCCC, tend to also present challenges. The issue of permits that the members have raised, authorization, the system not being digitized, I have covered that in the last presentation to yourselves, I think about a week ago, to say we have an IT system which is fairly old, but it is very functional and effective. We are on the cusp of establishing or launching a new system that has been in the making for the good part of the last 4 to 5 years. Clearly, that would actually resolve some of the issues that have been raised, but until then, we will remain somewhat under digitized. But it is something that we're actually working on. Perhaps the last point I'll submit to you, Chair, is I've had engagements with several CEOs in the last perhaps month or so. And it is something that I'll probably also put to this meeting as well. And that is to say, each of the companies that are registered under the Act deserve the undivided attention of the office that I run, which therefore means whatever it is the challenges that they have, I have to know and be in a position to resolve. However, Chair, what this office will not be able to do is where the entities that collectively constitute perhaps what the industry is, and they actually have perhaps common problems and all that, it is difficult to resolve because each of these companies have got different challenges, and they may not perhaps also own up to both their inefficiencies in their own systems, defective documentation, and incomplete documentation. And no amount, Chair, of criticizing us as the office actually would change that. We are willing to engage and say, how best can we help them to help themselves? Until that actually happens, the whole collective or a ramrod approach to resolving what they believe are challenges individually is not going to help. And I'm aware of where those that have actually seen the light of the day have felt there is this office and they shall engage with this office. And I stand here saying I invite them to actually engage because a lot can be resolved whenever there is actually proper and effective engagement. I think I shall rest there, sir.
No, thank you so much. Well done. I knew that you would cover these issues because you have covered them at the meeting we had with you about last week or 2 weeks back. Yes, no, thanks. And on the digitization, look, I'm sure the industry can help as well to ensure that really this matter is really is resolved. So but the sector is taking note of it and it's going to be speeded up. I mean, we're in the days of industrial revolution number 4, and so we can't be so archaic and still use pen and the pen, paper and the pen, where we can go online and get things move quicker. I mean, we are now able to interact like this and still able to deal with all the business of government and parliament. So what's stopping you from coming together and resolving that problem? In my view, there's the either friend or self, I think you should be, you must be guilty of not resolving this one. All right. Colleagues, I now open it up for discussion. Some members of my committee have been kicked out by the system. There was a report that there was a storm, a very big storm raging elsewhere. I think I'm not sure in Cape Town or in KZN. And all right, colleagues, I've seen that. But just before I recognize you, my co-chair, do you have to say anything? Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, it's raining here, so I can't even hear a thing.
I see. Okay.
It's no. The thunderstorm is raining.
Yes, no.
Thank
you so much. All right. At least you are still with us. All right, Mr. Marel, I can see your hand. Talking about digitization, I don't see your hand on the screen.
I have used this one. I don't know if you have seen that one.
Oh, I see. All right. Okay. All right. The floor is yours.
Okay. Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you very much to both presentations and the comments made. It is really, I mean, the challenges are so much. The unfortunate thing where we sit is we represent the interests of the Defence Force, the SANDF and the Department of Defence. And clearly, there are many more of our colleagues who need to be involved. And I mean, there was a call by on the end of the first presentation to you, Chair, that maybe there must be some subcommittee or a discussion taking place with the other of our colleagues in the other portfolio committees that relates to the industry, because clearly that impacts quite heavily on the SANDF and the Department of Defense. Some of these things we can have a control over and we can make an impact, and that is what we must do. I want to start off by referring to the NCACC. That's the one thing that, you know, we've got direct oversight over, and I share your concern because I've also heard from industry players that clearly they were supposed to be sorting these things out, and clearly it seems like it has not been sorted out. If we listen to the presentation that was made today, plus individual comments that has been made in the run of our business and interactions, there clearly are some concerns. Now, I don't know, the industry hasn't made specific recommendations. Do they want them to sit on a weekly basis, on a bi-monthly basis, on a two-weekly basis? Because clearly there seems to be some hold-ups in the process, and obviously for them, the primary objective is to get the permits done and to get the exports. I've got two questions in terms to the industry in this regard. And that is with regards to, you know, the challenges. You must maybe be more blunt and direct with us in terms of the actual challenges that you have received and that you experienced, so that we can at least try to address that. Then also, we get reports by the NCACC, which is normally permits approved and export contracts approved. But we never know how much of those are actually exported. And it seems like there are challenges with the actual exporting of that. Now, I would very much like to know if we can get more information with regards to that challenge. And then also, we never get reports on how many applications were turned down. It's only the value of them being approved or the permits being approved. If you can give us an indication of, you know, what are the numbers and the volumes of those get turned down, and those that the yeses are taking so long, as you've quite rightfully said, then it can just as well be a no very quickly. It's more beneficial. So if we can get responses on that, but also by the NCACC. Then I certainly want to know more about the SMMEs. SECDEF, you have indicated that you will address SMMEs, but eventually you've only addressed the BEE and the military veterans. So, because if I picked up that there's about 12,500 employees in the industry members, and then another 50,000 that are, indirectly. So where does the SMME sector lies, within the 12,500 or within that 50,000? Because we need to know how many of the impact of these, because this is directly on employment and of economic opportunities and growth. So if you can give us an indication, and also you've given us the indication of, a probable 40% cut in employment if we don't resolve problems. But what will be the potential of the industry, specifically the potential contribution to the GDP? That's the major issue that the Minister of Finance are looking for, is contribution to the GDP. And I would very much like to know that. Then on the NEL, I've listened to what Mr. Sadiq has said, and I just want to ask him a number of questions. Again, he doesn't report to us, but to Department of Public Enterprises, but obviously it affects us. And I think what someone in the first presentation has been said, that part of the frustrations of the industry seems that they liaise with other departments and portfolio committees who doesn't normally or necessarily have the empathy and the understanding of the defense industry like we have got. So somehow we must try to resolve that and try to assist them also in that. So Mr. Sadiq, I would very much like to know from you. You have indicated that you require a 683 million rand from the Department of Defense. You have not, or the industry has not referred to that tonight, because I need to know, on your organization, there seems to be a few very profitable and very, very well-operated units, like Landwirts, like Dynamics, and like RDM. And I'm asking this purely because I do not have all the information that you might have, is why can the critical of the NEL not be taken over by private sector? Why can those units of yours or business units of yours not be privatized? So why is it the industry and everybody so dependent on the NEL that if the NEL goes under, everybody seems to be going under? Why is there not another a system in that regard? Then I also want to know about the intellectual properties. And I know this was an issue for many, many years. Also, there was at one stage a bit of a difference between Arms Corps and the NEL in terms of to who some of these IPs actually belong. Does it belong to the NEL, which I think was mentioned in your financial statements? Or does it belong to Arms Corps and the Department of Defense? Some of these IPs, I think SECDEF referred to that in her report, that it seems like it belongs to individuals. So it's in knowledge and the capacity of individuals who then go and work abroad in Saudi or wherever they might go and work. Does that IPs belong to individuals, or does it belong to the NEL? Does it belong to the DOD? Does it belong to Arms Corps? Where does that lie, and the real value of that as well? Then I also want from the NEL. There are certain things that we know that we are dependent on the NEL, and that is specifically the Rayfalk, and especially the potential of a Rayfalk Mark II, the Oryx replacement. There are strategic weapons like the G5, T5, the RG31, etc. Some of these MRAPs those things that is of strategic importance to the Defence Force as well. How can we make sure that those units stay available and the capacity stay available irrespective of what happened to Janelle itself. Then I also just wanted to know, Chairperson, when the SecDef has referred to doing business with military veterans and the industry doing business with military vet or companies that has got military veterans, do they have a separate database or do they work with a database of the Department of Military Veterans? Because somehow, and that is also where we can have an influence to help and assist so that we have got a list and a data list that is that has been confirmed and verified by us. Chairperson, then maybe I must just leave there, but because I mean there are so many more questions than we can that we can talk about. Because the one thing that I just wanted to know from the defense industry, and that links to the end user certificate and that whole challenge on that. Often we hear criticisms of, you know, mortar shells that has been picked up in Yemen. Some of, you know, RDM or one of the other industries or even the NELS products, you know, munition products might end up on both sides in Algeria. How do we deal with these issues? How, what do you do as the industry to make sure that we don't sit in a situation and the NCACC sit in a situation that they are confronted by maybe facts, maybe some activists around the world, even in South Africa, that confront us by implying that some of these United Nations regulations and you know, resolutions are being transgressed most probably. How do you help us so that we can again help you? And then finally, you know, to the industry specifically, what do you require from us? How do you want us to help you so that we can see the industry prosper, but that specifically that we can see that the defense force will be sustainable? On that matter, on the sustainability of the defense force, are you only basing your, you know, the defense force as the client? Do you only base that on what they have said that they want? And we know that National Treasury is reluctant to provide the funding for that. Or have you come up with a redesigned model of what you can offer to the South African Defence Force and the DoD about a product development of alternative products or better alternatives or way of providing these so that they can be in a better position to comply with the constitution in terms of integrity of our country, but also how all of that can assist you as an industry to be more sustainable and more profitable and more strategic of benefit to the South Africa as well. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you so much. And I see the hand of Kenny Mutomai.
Thanks, Chairperson. Chairperson, in Turkey, we have a heavy rain here in Mohali City. Chairperson, I have a problem. Usually when the department is representing the military veteran and the South African National Defense Force, they always mention the military veteran. But my problem is one, the military veteran.
There's something wrong with the way you positioned your screen. I can only see the chest and not the face.
Yeah, because we don't have a light.
I'm fine.
The generator is.
Well, just switch off the video then.
Okay.
Yeah, at least you'll be more clearer.
Yeah, I'm not going to say. Chairperson, I'm going to tell you about Masole, Department there, South African National Defence Force, re-include a whole my military veteran. My military veteran, how on anything in or by benefit, even though department did create charity, you to some my military veteran. In terms of military veteran by a benefit, go at limiting, go 1 million or some world is pay. And how to share my military veteran, Baba provide a guardian to Mara Havana di Pete, Havana di Point, Shikibutas, Ntok Batosilo, King of Ayesan were the military veteran, they must benefit something so that they can stand for themselves. Auto Shabella, when I do say yes, Halana Queen, the like, Otto Laura, look at the training, the more the municipality, Honale, the 7 years, and we're given the benefit to the military veteran because we can use those military veterans, Montun Senga, the like. Hogata di plena hogata di town di yaka hona le di criminal bo bongata bo bo itjwa ke di lokwane tse leng gore they are well armed. Why we don't use the military veteran? Because most of them that the generals who are the military the captain baba sa itse nix. Why don't we use these people? Because always hare bua ka South African National Defence Force re-include a little the military veteran, but they benefit nothing. I thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you so much. All right. Let me invite, I'll start with you, Mr. Ndlovu from AMD, just to check if you have anything to say. I'll go to Dineel. Go to Jale, and I would also want to call in Advocate Bada from AMSCO, and then end with the Secretary for Defense in that order, please.
Thank you, Chairperson, for the opportunity. With regards to the questions that have been raised, particularly by Honorable Member Mare, I will touch on a few of them. The ones relating to turned down applications and export permits, approved and not approved, I will leave that to Advocate Jelle, because that information sits with him. The challenge from where we are sitting is that the industry in which we are in, information is shared on a need-to-know basis. So before companies can enter into contractual agreements with their potential customers, they sign a non-disclosure. So that information is only disclosed with the relevant government authorities. But I think Mr. Jelle can speak more authoritatively on that one. Honorable Member Mare, if I may start with your last question on the type of relationship or assistance that we as a industry and usage having with the SANDF under the current climate. Within the master plan process, we have started having those discussions because we have also looked at the fact that the DOD is our primary client. The SANDF is our primary client. The fact that they are going through challenges does not mean we need to forget or negate their existence. So we are engaging as an industry internally on what mechanisms can we put in place to ensure that at least capabilities within the DOD are maintained up until such time that the fortunes of the SANDF improve. So we have started those discussions internally within the industry. And within the master plan process, we have not, however, taken them to the SANDF itself. We've got ideas on what we think could be possible models in which we can work with the SANDF in that regard. So those discussions have started, but it's only internally. With the assistance that we require or would request from the portfolio committee, if I were to sum it up, Honorable Member, I would say it's accountability and consequence management. We have processes in this country. We've got laws that we would need to follow. So if the portfolio committees can hold all of us accountable it would assist in ensuring that the process functions in the way that it needs to function. And it would also insist that the portfolio committee is informed correctly on issues, accurately on the information that is available out there. So that's summing it up, in that you need to hold all of us accountable, besides the policy interventions that we've placed before you as our proposal. In terms of flouting of the rules, I think this one, Advocate Jelle would also be able to assist. But as a industry, we stated in our presentation, we believe very strongly in the arms control regime that South Africa has, because it allows us to say without any fear of contradiction that whatever we export with the express approval of our government. However, and Mr. Jelle will elaborate on this further, and the Secretary for Defense did touch on it briefly. On what happens post-sale is another matter entirely. But where we play a role in providing our government with all the relevant information that would allow them to take a decision on whether to export or not, we have played that role, and we will continue to play that part. With regards to recommendations, and this is the last question I will touch on, sir. With regards to recommendations on what we as the industry think is the best way to work, we think that, Chair, would be a culmination or a result of a consultative process. So we are open to engaging not only the DCAC, but all the relevant stakeholders in coming up with the best model in which South Africa can be able to function and compete, provided that whichever system we put in place has predictability and reliability. Because those are the two core principles that we would want to see in whichever system. So recommendations, it would be premature for us to talk about them now outside a consultative process that would allow then those recommendations to be the ultimate result of. So, Chair, thank you. I would just want to touch on those two issues. Maybe lastly, before I hand over to you, sir, I appreciate the input given by Advocate Jelle on a supplementary meeting that is scheduled for Tuesday. We are very hopeful and encouraged that the committee will sit on Tuesday and deliberate on outstanding matters and come to a decision. We are not advocating for a yes decision where a no decision is the appropriate one, but at least if we can have some certainty and clarity on the outstanding permit, it would allow us to manage our environment going forward. Thank you very much, Chair.
Right. I think it's easy. All you are saying is that whoever is given a responsibility and must be made to account on the responsibilities assigned to him or her. In actual fact, you are calling upon everyone to honor to keep his side of the bargain, so that you are able to move with ease. No, it's fine. I take note of that, and of course the other things you have just said. The good thing is that you are not asking for favors. You are saying if we all keep our side of the bargain. And the machine would be well out, and you would not be complaining like now you could do. Okay, it's fine. I take note of that. Mr. Jerry, Advocate Jerry.
Hello. I think I'll respond to three things that perhaps are raised in relation to the work we do. In the statistics, which are compiled either quarterly or annually, where in those reports that would reflect contracting permits that were actually authorized, export, import, conveyance as well, there is a section where the number of applications that were denied is actually provided for. And I can report that for the calendar year 2019, there was no denial, as well as report that for quarter one and quarter two for 2020, because we're using a calendar year basis, there were also no denials. There is a provision for the denial itself, as well as which country it was that there was such a denial, but there is nothing to report on in that regard. Now, for the members that are there that are not TEFS members of parliament, but there is a system in parliament, which is the ATC system, where these reports are published and they actually become open source. It therefore then may be useful for whoever that actually needs information there, because this would actually constitute tabled reports that have been accepted and dealt with by parliament to then satisfy themselves as to what the information it is that is contained there. The aspect of applications that are under consideration, I have heard, I think, Mr. Ndlovu indicating that they would rather get the committee to actually deny rather than place applications under consideration. Parliamentary members would recall that I indicated in the last presentation that I had that the NCACC can only take three decisions in light of applications that are presented to them as recommended by the scrutiny committee, and that is to deny or to approve or to place the matter under consideration. Perhaps it's called comfort that when an application is placed under consideration, it actually means that it has not been denied. However, the committee is of the view when they actually place an application under consideration that those aspects that have not been clarified or that leaves questions that cannot be answered during the sitting of that meeting must be dealt with in order for that application to serve subsequently in the next meeting, and thus ensuring that there is not an undue or reckless denial, because the committee itself is of the opinion that it must support in all aspects the exportation of material that is actually manufactured in South Africa, which actually lives up to the billing and also becomes a very good ambassador for this country in terms of where it will be used and how effective it shall be used, in terms of both the price benefit as well as the technology. Perhaps the last thing I'd comment on is the information that we require in order to be able to make determinations, that is in terms of Section 15, is provided by the State Security Agency, DERCO, and the Defense Intelligence. It is when that information is forthcoming and it is useful that it can be presented to the committee that we are actually in a position to then advise the committee accordingly. But if that information is not actually at the correct level or format that it can be used by the committee, it presents challenges, and we are working at resolving how best to bridge the gaps or remodel how the information has got to come through such that it enables the committee to take those necessary, you know, decisions. It is not a very easy thing to deny, but it is something that the committee wants to actually avoid at all costs, in that most of the applications that are presented to the committee are actually approved. I'd like to thank you, Chair.
Thank you so much, Advocate Chede. And Mr. Satik, Group CEO of INAN.
Thank you, Chair. So in response to the questions that were pointed out, I think I would like to refer to the defense review that was approved in 2015, and the triple mandate that was given to DENAL was one, to be the custodian of the sovereign and strategic capabilities to service the SANDF, and then to the extent possible to commercialize those capabilities, and also to contribute towards the socio-economic of South Africa. And then recently, the Department of Defense, their analysis stated that Danel was not in a position any longer to sustain these sovereign and strategic capabilities at our own cost. And hence, what we did is that we've asked all the divisions within the Danel group, how much or what is the cost that we've been spending on strategic and sovereign capabilities? And this talks about obsolescence management of some of the capabilities and also to fund research and development, technology-driven projects. And that's how we got to the number of 683 million rand for the current year, because that's the amount of money we are spending off our very weak balance sheet to keep our sovereign and strategic capabilities in place so that we can service the SANDF. And that's been at a cost, as we have seen. And the point that was made earlier on around the turnover of our engineers, particularly in the missile division, many of them who left us, the non-payment of salaries or partial payment of salaries was really the straw that broke the camel's back. Because what they are looking for is to be involved in research and project-related opportunities, which we haven't been able to provide them. I think the point that was made, so in terms of the 683 million, about two-thirds of that request related to keeping our missile capability in a stable and growth footprint. The other question was around keeping the capabilities in place for the Royfal, the Oryx, and our landward capabilities. You know, we do work very closely with our with Royfalk and Oryx, for instance. We are working closely with the South African Air Force, and similarly with the landward capabilities, we work closely with the SA Army. But we are experiencing a declining budget, defense budget, which does have an impact on these capabilities and our ability to sustain and develop them further. Because some of these platforms, for instance, the Royfalk and the Oryx, are coming towards another upgrade, and hence we are engaging with the Air Force around additional funding for this. And the challenge is, within a limited budget, that becomes quite a challenge. And hence, in terms of driving an export revenue, there was a point made about privatization. We did make the point that we are looking for strategic equity partners. Danel is a conglomerate with different specialized businesses, and we are now looking for partners that can contribute towards those specialized businesses. And hence, we are using the term strategic equity partners, i.e. we're looking for sustainable market access in the export markets, we're looking for capital, and we're looking for technology. We also believe that with the strategic equity partners, within a declining defense spend, we would be able to still provide the SANDF with world-class products. Around IP ownership, if you would allow me, Chair, I would like to ask my colleague, William Slokani, who is our group CEO, COO, to comment on that briefly.
Thank you very much, William Slokani. Yes, William and Chair. Thank you very much, Talib. Good evening, members. With regard to the IP, I think the question was more on the value of the IP. There's two aspects of the IP. One is the tangible IP, and then the other is an intangible IP. So the intangible, Honorable Marae, it refers to the knowledge which is sitting in people's heads. And I think this is where we are getting difficulty in terms of management of that particular IP. And as a Talib has alluded to, that a lot of skills we have lost as a result of us not paying the salaries. So that IP which sits in those people's heads, we have lost as a result. However, with regards to the tangible IP, which means it's all the designs that we have, we still have that particular IP. We have not valued it at the moment. Probably it amounts to billions of rents. And I'm sure Mr. Mkwanazi in the House can maybe give a picture in that regard. The management of it, Chair, it is more of us that we are trying to sustain what we have currently. Yes, we have lost a lot, specifically on the missile business, which is more on the civilian side. But we are doing our best in terms of obtaining the skill sets that is left. Thanks very much, Chair.
Thank you so much. Well, you can, Sadiq. Mr. Sadiq?
I have. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you so much. All right. That was Dinel. AMSCO, Advocate, Group CEO, Advocate Mbado.
Thanks, Chair. Perhaps I'll first deal with the issue of the IP. I think insofar as IP utilization is concerned, we have a policy framework as AMSCO, and I think it's very favorable. But of course, as the investors in that IP will always require that we get some reward out of it. But in terms of the framework, we believe that it's fair and it's favorable to all the people who want to develop and further enhance the IP. Chair, I would also like to deal with the issue of the maybe as an input or as a suggestion around the issue of digitization, which you have also highlighted. I must indicate that we're the first recipients or first point of call with the industry insofar as the EUC's administration process is concerned. And we've developed call it an in-house and open source solution, how we process and track those applications, making sure that before we then forward the application to DCAC, that all what needs to be submitted and all the boxes are ticked. That solution was developed in-house with the help of an external service provider. It's an open source solution. All I'm trying to say, Chair, it didn't really cost us much. I'm sure it's something that jointly myself and the SecDev, we will take it out offline and make sure that we work towards that. We've got very capable skills internally, and it's our view that it's doable, Chair. I must, on behalf of AMSCO, Chair.
I thought so too.
Yes, Chair. No. I'm sure we can do it. Chair, in terms of the presentations of today, Chair, I think we firstly thank you very much for inviting us. I mean, the focus was broadly, and there were two presentations mainly focusing on the DoD as well as the defense. But I think we find ourselves, I mean, we are always in the middle and making sure that we support the Department of Defense. Simultaneously, we make sure that we support the industry. I have made an undertaking, Chair, that we need to resuscitate our discussions with the industry. I think their sentiments will resonate with them, Chair. And I think it's our firm view that the situation is getting worse out there, Chair. The picture is getting, you know, bleak and by day. And it's our concerted view as well that, you know, our political principles, the portfolio committee, the executive really needs to seriously consider this issue and prioritize it, Chair, in the interest of our government, in the interest of our state, Chair, as well as our Department of Defense, Chair. It's always difficult, Chair, to say, whilst you know the picture that your parent is not getting much, but you come with demands. And it's quite becomes quite a challenge for a child, because we know the picture that DoD is faced with budgetary constraints, but at the same time there is a level of performance. But now the industry is not supported, as such they are not performing, and the money is not flowing. So I think these are the issues we really, I think, seriously, you know, along the lines of what you will have in other forums, Chair, you know, in NEDLAC. We almost need our own NEDLAC where we have at the highest level, from a political level, from Arms Corps, who plays that role on behalf of government, as well as the industry, we sort of have, you know, these engagements. It can't be that, you know, we will be talking about, the industry's view is that, you know, the permits are not being processed or approved, the committee is not sitting. But on the other side, you know, you have DCACC saying, oh, everything is well and fine and good. The reality is we need to talk and get more closer, because the challenges are quite, you know, compelling and are confronting us, Chair. And I suppose we will have to find other means and forums to make sure at least to keep each other posted and updated, because as we speak, Chair, Danel is faced with all these threats. We are inundated with number of countries, companies from abroad. You know, we're not sure as well, Chair, that they come with noble intentions. But the indications are that we want to work with you. We know that Danel has got idling capacity. Danel is losing skills, but we believe that you've got sovereign capability. We are willing, and numbers are bandied around, Chair. But again, at the core of that, the frustration even from these potential investors is saying, but are you guys really committed and do you really want to partner and work with us? And these are the questions, Chair, that I'm saying, with all what is happening, the in essence, it is for us as patriots, Chair, to say what is it that we want and what is it what we want for the generations to come. And people that have left NL, they call us, you know, weekly, you know, and saying, if there are real opportunities, if you are resuscitating Danel, we will come back wherever we are, but we can't stay and look at our families, you know, that are not being fed. And I think these are the dynamics, Chair, and everywhere we go. So from our side, Chair, we are quite happy as Arms Corps, because the threat to the DoD, the threat to the industry is equally a threat to us, Chair, because if there are no projects, we might have to let go our staff as well as us. But again, there are immense opportunities surrounding ourselves. But again, is the decision-making, Chair, that is not forthcoming on a number of these initiatives, on a number of these interventions. And I'm sure, Chair, the if we could actually, you know, sing on the same hymn sheet as government, as the industry, as labor, as all other stakeholders, there's quite a lot, I mean, Chair, of opportunities that are there. And I mean, there are some countries when we, or companies rather, in certain countries, you know, who then unsolicitedly approaches us and say, you know what, we want to work with you in our company where we operate. It will only take two key people. It will make decisions. We're a company of three or four people, and we want to invest. You know, and the numbers in billions, Chair, USDs are being mentioned. So, Chair, all I'm trying to say, yes, I think now, you know, we've been talking about these issues, and everyone knows what are the issues confronting the industry, confronting the DoD, and I think it's time now we put the talk into action, Chair, and we start doing what is expected of us as the leaders of society. Those would be my inputs, Chair.
Thank you so much. Before I call SACDEF, let me take this one hand so that we draw to the end of the meeting. Honorable Nkembo.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Greetings to you and all members. I'm sorry to drag you back. Actually,
there's no problem. I was going to take another round of questions, but in view of time, I will limit it to you and any other urgent question before we I ask the sector to close. You are fine, Honourable Chair.
Okay. Actually, my question is directed to Mr. Njovu. He did mention that the industry has 72 members, of which they are there voluntarily. If he may elaborate on that one, and also indicate how many female members and male members. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Any other quick urgent question that cannot wait? I'm going to propose that we have another round of discussion. Before we get another round of discussion with the industry, we need to meet on our own and digest the information that has been placed on the table and decide what we need to do, because we can't leave the situation like this. The matter is raised again, but this time I've been told that the situation is under control and these problems are being attended. But when they are being raised again, and these people are in business, and they require a government to function business-like. And as soon as a government starts to impede the speed, then we get the problems that the colleagues are raising right now. Let me just take the vent. And I will take Honourable Mage, and then take Trevor. Trevor, I will take you. Maybe let me just check who else is there. And yes, you will come before the sector, Trevor. And let me just take Jerome Mage now. I think the last person from our group. Thank you, Honourable
Mage. Thank you very much, Chairperson. It's rather very disappointing when you find that the industry is not being supported by things like it's recess, the ministers are not meeting. I mean, maybe in some other countries, if you mention such a thing as an impediment to the industry, they might be very surprised. It somehow shows a lack of understanding of the industry itself. I mean, we're talking about employment. We're talking about Forex. We're talking about a lot of things within the industry. And one presenter there even mentioned that Inbu Cameroon and North and Western Africa, European presidents or prime ministers, physically go to those countries, and when they leave there,
they do this in the countries where they are deployed.
That's correct, and we've got DERCO there, and it's I wouldn't say embarrassing. It's a hard whatever term it is. I mean, such things, I should think maybe the industry would expect us as parliament to do something about such things. And I think we can do something about that. I mean, why should they wait for ministers to meet in order that there must be business going on? I mean, that is their duty. And I think maybe as a committee, we need to do something about this. It's totally unacceptable. or you, as a business person, you wait for ministers to sit? I mean, we can simply say that they meet, they sit every fortnight, whether there's anything or whatever, but every fortnight they must sit, and it's as simple as that. Yeah, I just wanted to emphasize that point. It's rather very disappointing. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you so much. I agree with you. And I think there's a point you raised. The industry expects us to do something because what they are exposed to is totally unacceptable. And I can't emphasize it better than you have done it. And I think we need to, like I said, we need to meet on our own, reflect on these matters, and then come up with the proposals that will, you know, I mean, that there must be consequence management. I mean, really, we can't leave the situation at the way it is now. And Trevor, I'm taking you before I take the SecDef, who then wind up the discussion. I think the good thing, SecDef was listening to all these concerns. And we'll work with you, SecDef. And the acquisition agency, AMSCO, to try and see what can be done to deal with the issues that have been raised. And Trevor?
Thanks. Thanks. Yeah. Chair, I think the problems or challenges that have been raised by industry are the same challenges that were raised in parliament last year. And I'm happy that you say you will try and resolve them. Let me come to the question of database for military veterans. The database for military veterans may be different from the Honorable Mr. Murray and myself, because with me, military veterans are those who fought for the struggle, and not everybody who was involved on the other side and or either side. But so we have the database for military veterans, are those who fought for the struggle, and we have discussed this thing with everybody, and I think everybody understands us. Where we come from. So we are trying to help those who have not been helped. And on the question of IP, the IP belongs to DOD, managed by AMSCO. So I just wanted to clear that the IP belongs to DOD and managed by AMSCO. So there's, you know, no question of ambiguity there. Tadel has spoken on the question of 683 million that they need. DOD took a decision, I think some years ago, when we work on the mock with DPE. You said that maybe later on when ministers change, we have had a problem, you know, with the Minister of DPE not meeting the Minister of Defense. But the issue is that the sovereign capabilities are those capabilities that the government should be able to pay for. And if we do not have resources, we should look for resources, you know, to say how are we going to pay for these resources. And this brings us to a problem of Danel being in the DP area, which doesn't really understand maybe Danel. So
the sooner we move, then I don't know, when, with resources, of course, to DOD, the better. Because Daniel has to be within DOD, and that the question of sovereign capabilities is not even discussed. Question of DOD of sovereign capabilities anyway is a national question, and the government must address the question of national sovereign capabilities. So, which means we have to generate funds to make sure that our sovereign capabilities are taken care of. Thank you, sir.
No, thank you so much, Mr. Nketi. And let me now ask you, Dev, to close.
Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you very much, Chair. Chair, I think by leaving me to be the last one to speak, I think almost all questions have been answered. But I just wanted to say, Chair, let me talk about the issue that I feel very passionate about, and that is the issue of denial. And I think that what denial needs is a concerted effort in trying to resolve their problem. And I think that the reason why we came together, DOD, National Treasury, and the Department of Public Enterprise, was that what we were doing until then, it was more of a piecemeal approach. You know, salaries need to be paid. You know, we need to pay UIF. We need to pay the taxes, et cetera. And we thought that that was not very helpful. What we do know at this point in time is that a lot of us in government are ready to throw our weight beyond behind dinner. And I think that our cry, I think, to the portfolio committee is just to understand how dire the situation is, that if we don't think that this is important, the question would be, how can other countries, your Ghana's, your Uganda and all those ones be coming up, because they've seen the value in the defense industry. So I think that we really need to sit and think together very well as to how we can take this forward, because then it has been a little bit difficult. And I must say, Chairperson, that even the President has said that the Minister must come with proposals in terms of how we're going to resolve this thing. And we have said, we have discussed it a lot, and I think that we can even find some time at some stage to discuss with issue, but it's something that cannot wait any longer. So, and also the point of convergence is that all of us feel that the defense industry of South Africa is in serious danger. So it requires that we all put in our efforts and do our bit that we can. There was a question, Chairperson, on the SMMEs. The second line of those that procure from DINEL is about 230 companies. So you can, I wouldn't be able to say that how many people that would be, but you can imagine how many of the families would be affected, how many jobs are going to be lost by us not really being able to resolve the issue of DINEL. I agree, Chairperson, and I would like to take the CEO of AMSCO and indeed the industry. I want to take them up to say how can we also better capacitate our NCACC office, particularly when it comes to digitization. Chairperson, I think that right now, if I am in the defense industry, I must be able to sit in the comfort of my office, put in my application for import or export permit. Then those in defense who run the NCACC must, after the meeting, tell us when, what decisions have been taken, what is required of them. Because we can do everything until we get to the point where we issue those export permits without actually us meeting. And it makes it convenient, and it provides also the ease of doing business.
So I will take the CEO of AMSCO up and see what is there, and probably whatever they have maybe improve. But we'll also engage the bigger industry to see what is it that they are prepared to do, Chairperson, from our side. And then let me just also close, Chairperson, to say I have thoroughly enjoyed the meeting and also just having a proper insights into the industry. So I think that with all the role players that are here, the stakeholders tonight, it can only get better. There will be ups and downs, but if we work together, I think no challenges are insurmountable. We should be able to overcome that and see what it is that we can do. But also, Chairperson, I think one of the things that we have to begin to think about is that I remember some many years ago when I was a young intelligence officer, when we dealt with the issues of the NCACC, they say, is this country violating human rights? Is this country in a war? Is there a chance that these weapons will get to the end users? Now, even if we were to deny some of the countries because we feel that the weapons will end somewhere else, we have seen now that if we don't sell, they will go to others who want to sell. And those are the ones that will tell us that we shouldn't sell. Given the state where we find ourselves, the economy of the country where it is, and I think the situation even worsened by COVID, are we still going to stick to that? Or has the time come for us to also have economic considerations? Because also keeping denial since democracy, it was an acknowledgement that it is a sovereign strategic security asset, but it is also an economic asset. Because if that goes down, one should have to think about how many jobs will be lost. So those would be my parting shot, Chairperson, that probably we need to bring to sharp focus the issue of national interest. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, I think that was the right point to end this meeting. And we will meet on our own, as I said. We'll invite you, SECDEF and the AMSCO group CEO to discuss and check if we cannot find the low-hanging fruits. And because I think there are matters that really do not require any magic to resolve. And one of them is to meet when you're supposed to meet and take business decisions, because failure to do that, it's money. Anytime if you lose time, you lose money. And no, it's fine. And you also is about the reputation. We need to maintain the reputation of the brand, and it's also about the reputation of the brand and the reputation of the country. And we've got to defend this industry, and we need it developed. And so that it develops SMMEs and create more jobs, and it carries the potential to, you know, attract foreign direct investment into the country. You know, in the 90s, when we government bought the defense packages. You know, the special defense packages, and many companies from abroad, foreign companies, saw an opportunity to come and partner with our foreign companies here, manufacturers, because they knew that from that time there would be need for maintenance, technological development, upgrading of systems, and those that were, you know, ahead of us. We're able to come and invest, partner with our people, and so that they keep these systems going. So we must not lose this, capability. I mean, it was said when it was reported that in Denel we lost about 70 odd engineers. I mean, that's a skill the country is losing. And very soon these people will be employed by our own competitors and they grow their industries and, you know, using our own skill. And I mean, you can't say they will not use our IPs. Look, remember when these companies have partnered with the local companies, they have access to the IPs, and they may actually use the IPs back in their own countries and start to build things that we had the comparative advantage as a country. So we must defend it well. We must not frustrate the industry, and we must work very hard to ease out the way of doing business. And it can't be business as usual. It's got to happen the way that business demands it. It's got to be effective. It's got to be efficient. And with that, colleagues, I'm not saying it's the last time we meet again, and we'll meet, I don't know when, to assess whether we're making progress in these discussions, because it's important. It's not just a talk show. It's important to, when these complaints have been registered, and especially where we are at fault as government, that we address those issues. And I think Marke said it covered very well to say the industry expects us to do something and we must find that thing that we need to do. I think we have an ally in the sector. I know she has an experience in the industry. And two, having worked in the space where she worked, she also was able to come close to this industry at different levels. And we also have our acquisition agency, AMSCO, that have gathered enough experience of the industry. I'm sure they will help us resolve the problems. With that, colleagues, let me thank all of you who have gone over time by 24 minutes. I'm sorry for that. And let me thank you. Beth Dinel, Group CEO, thank you very much. Thank to your team. And AMSCO, Advocate Bada, thank you very much. And thanks to your team. And Jelle, Advocate Jelle, thank you. And SecDef, you are part of us. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank all of you for participation.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, everybody. Wonderful, wonderful evening. Great stuff.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Bye. Good night, everybody.
Bye, guys.